This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday Christmas Eve edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. It is Technology Thursday. Is it better to have a hybrid electric vehicle or all electric? We'll get a contrarian view of the financial markets looking ahead to 2021. That's in our next segment. Right now, let's talk about developments involving the stimulus package. We're joined by Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. He's based here in Chicago. Andy, a little bit of back and forth here. Do you think this ends up being a significant deal, or is this stimulus package going to end up becoming law?
Well, it's like a bad reality television show cliffhanger, right? We've got a deadline that we've got to get things passed to fund the U.S. government, so there's pressure there. But this has gone back and forth. The president came out with a surprise video stating that he wanted $2,000 stimulus checks instead of the $600, and that set into motion a lot of chaos. There's already been a couple of votes on that or attempts to vote on it. On the $2,000 one, went nowhere. They'll probably bring it back up on Monday. But the bill has already been passed, right, the $600 one, and it's just up to the president whether he signs it or not. So that's what we're kind of waiting for, to see if he'll do that. Both the House and the Senate have enough votes to override the president on a veto. But again, it's just so much uncertainty surrounding this. It's just unbelievable.
And regardless of the policy or implications, what should or shouldn't happen, it would seem like the idea of sending $2,000 per person out to most Americans, it'd be pretty politically popular at the very least, which makes it even more thorny in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, and it sets up a situation where the House Democrats are going to do a vote on this, and they're going to force the Republicans in the House to vote against it, if they will. And they'll push it over to the Senate. It won't go anywhere in the Senate. And we have to remember that there's a lot on the line here for two races down in Georgia that will determine, you know, who controls the Senate next year. So there's a lot to be said here that this play to get this $2,000 check would maybe force those two Republican candidates in Georgia to vote against it or with it, and really if they're aligned with the president or not. So it's dangerous territory for them.
I don't know if this has really been discussed a lot or not. The president sort of brought this up. Does it make sense to maybe get rid of some of what would be described as pork sort of projects that are in this bill and replace them with money directly to Americans? Or in the end, does it not really matter? I mean, either way, it's money going out the door.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. You know, it's always sausage making, right? You never really want to pay that close of attention. But these little perks that are in there for a lot of different districts are the way that you get people to vote for the bill. So if you take them out, then you may not get the support of everyone. Would it be better placed elsewhere? Of course. I mean, there's much better ways to spend the money to generate economic growth and to help directly Americans. But again, this is part of our, you know, representative government that we have, this constitutional republic, not a democracy, that functions quite well, believe it or not. But right now, it's really creaking.
Thanks so much. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. You can find him online at andrewbush.com. Just ahead, we'll talk with stock market contrarian Mark Hulbert about what we can expect in 2021. Stock market optimism really soaring of late. Is that a warning sign for contrarians? Mark Hulbert is here, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Mark, I mean, you have a pandemic going on. You have a lot of economic uncertainty, and let these, you know, the markets just keep on climbing. What do you think of this? It is amazing. I mean, you know, as we know, the markets have always, not just now, swung back and forth between the pendulums between one end greed and the other fear. And so we are clearly closer to the greed end of the spectrum. There's a way in which you could tell the story about today's markets and think, you know, things are pretty terrible out there. We have high unemployment. We have, you know, a good portion of the economy not able to run at full steam and so forth. And yet the stock market's at an all-time high. It's really a strange world out there because people are foreseeing that down the road things will return to more or less a sense of normalcy. And yet at the same time, we know that it's going to get a lot darker before it gets brighter. And so how do you invest according to that? And the way that I try to make sense of it is that regardless of what's happening in the real world, we also have sentiment swinging between those two extremes. And the market tends to struggle in the face of extreme optimism. And we have a lot of that right now.
And so what do you do? I mean, how do you invest then in light of that?
Well, if you're a long-term investor, and I suspect most of us are, we love to talk about the markets on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. But nonetheless, for most of us, this is something that, you know, it's a good armchair parlor game we can talk about. But I don't think we should be trading in and out of our retirement, 401ks and IRAs and so forth, according to sentiment. But nonetheless, if you had to take money out of the market anyway, let's say in the next several months, it's probably a good idea to take it out when sentiment is high, because that means probably the market's at a high level relative to where it'll be in several months' time. So now might be a good time. If you were going to be putting new money into the market, it might not be a bad idea to wait a little bit so that you're not end up putting money in at a high price.
What does the responsible investor do with some of these stocks that are more emotional buys, you know, where the underlying numbers just don't seem to support their stock price, and yet there's this fear of missing out on some of those emotional stocks as they just keep going higher?
Now, you're quite right to identify that emotional dimension. It turns out that I think if we were solely mechanical robots who looked at only the data and were unemotional, we'd probably put all our money in index funds and do something else. But nonetheless, we're not. We're a very much emotional being. So I think the best advice is to take most of your money, put it into a portfolio that doesn't change very often. That's going to be your permanent portfolio. Take a little bit of money. I don't know. It depends on how much you have. Let's say 10%. Put it in a more speculative portfolio that you can play around with. Just make sure you don't start taking money out of your permanent portfolio to support your gaming habit.
Yeah, and that's really the key, right? You almost need an account where you say, yeah, I don't want to lose this, but if I do, it's okay, as opposed to the money that you really need to save.
That's right. I mean, we have to be psychologically realistic. We are going to play the market. It's something that we all think that we can do better than the average. It's like those surveys that say that all of us think that we're above average drivers. We all think we're above average investors. It's a good way of actually setting up that scoreboard. Look at your two portfolios, one permanent, one speculative or play money. You get an ongoing scoreboard of whether you really and truly, not just in your mind, but really and truly making more money.
So looking ahead to 2021 as the contrarian, is there maybe a sector that you think as a contrarian that you'd be looking to and maybe one you'd be backing away from?
Well, yeah, and this is I probably would, and this is not particularly earth-shattering because I think the market's already foreseeing some of this shift of leadership. But if the economy gets back to more or less a sense of normal, I think some of these tech stocks that have really enjoyed a huge boom because of the pandemic and the fact that we're working and staying at home, I think they will have to give up a little bit of their gains or at least not participate in the market's leadership as the economy shifts back to more or less a sense of normalcy.
Thanks so much, Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Always good to get your insight. Up next, health officials are warning about a coronavirus surge after the holidays.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Federal health officials say more than a million people in the U.S. have been vaccinated against the coronavirus. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Michelle Cortez, health reporter for Bloomberg News. Michelle, pretty significant, 1 million people. I mean, it's a lot, but there's obviously a lot more to go.
There have vaccinated a million people now, but we have distributed almost 10 million vaccine doses at this point. So it's just a matter of actually administering all of this vaccine that's now building up. We have some of them in place, and it's just a process of rolling it out.
So what's the holdup? I mean, in general, is it deciding who gets it, or does it just actually take too, you know, a long time to get that many doses out?
I think it's just literally a matter of process at this point, right? You have to have the nurses and the health staff who are able to administer the vaccines. You have to have the people who are waiting. You have these processes in place. At this point, the most efficient way to get them done is in some of these nursing homes where they're going in and vaccinating everybody in the nursing home. And that is a little bit more of a stable population. They are, you know, mainly there and waiting for it and available to have it done. When you're starting to look at the healthcare, you know, practice members, you need nurses and doctors and the food staff and the janitorial staff and all of those folks, it's a little bit more of a process just in terms of actually doing the bureaucratic piece of it.
Seems like people could start getting antsy as they're hearing more and more reports of millions of doses just sort of sitting in warehouses somewhere.
Right. Well, I'm not so sure that it's literally just sitting in warehouses. It's a matter of getting them all to the places that they need to be, right? And they've said that they're going to be having about 20 million doses that are going out over the next few weeks. And so if you think about it, you know, we've done 1 in 20 million. Actually, there's 10 million out there so far. So about 1/10 of those that have been distributed have been administered. So that's not too bad at this point. I mean, we are still early in the process, any hiccups that you might have had. And, you know, perhaps some uncertainty. Some people are nervous about doing it. And as more people do it and people have familiarity, they know somebody who's been vaccinated, came through okay, hopefully we'll get more lines and a more efficient process underway.
Are health officials talking about what they expect over the next couple of weeks, given the fact that, yeah, there's, you know, some people staying close to home, but a lot of people traveling, 2 million people in airports the past 2 days?
Yeah, absolutely. We are definitely not seeing a huge decrease in the number of people traveling that you might expect. It is down by 30%, but that still means 70% of the people who would travel are out there traveling, millions and millions of Americans, as you say. And of course, when they get to their end destination, they're not just going to a new place to be there. They're meeting their family and their friends, and we're getting this circulation happening again. And so exactly as you're predicting, or as you mentioned, that they are expecting a surge on top of a surge, another spike. And the terrifying thing is we are seeing record numbers of deaths, record number of hospitalizations. And if we see this enhanced surge, we're definitely going to start overrunning some of our hospitals. Some of that's happening in California and other places already. And so then it just really starts to spiral, because it's not just the coronavirus patients that aren't getting the care they need. It's anyone who's having any kind of an emergency medical condition.
Very, very briefly here. Sorry. So if they do travel, as so many are, if they're wearing masks, if they're 6 feet or more away, even when they're at grandma's house, obviously it's not as safe as not being there. But is that providing any kind of significant protection?
It is better than nothing. I would say that it's not anywhere near as good as a vaccine, and certainly not as good as just keeping your distance entirely and waiting until next Christmas. But it's better. Something is better than nothing. So if you have to go, definitely wear your mask, keep your distance. It does offer some protection.
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you. Thanks so much, Michelle Cortez, health reporter at Bloomberg News.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Traders are headed home after a holiday-shortened day on Wall Street. We'll tell you how Wall Street finished. It's Technology Thursday. We'll talk about the significance of the so-called plug-in hybrid. What's happening with oil and gas prices? We'll take a look. Some news we're following. Republicans in the House have blocked a Democratic effort to gain traction with President Trump's wishes for the coronavirus stimulus package. On the markets, already closed because of the holiday weekend coming up. The Dow up 70, NASDAQ up 33, and the S&P up 13 points. A little bit of sunshine, but more clouds in Chicagoland on a chilly Christmas Eve. Right now it's 15 degrees. The wind chill makes it feel like just zero. 96 more lives have been lost in Illinois among people infected with coronavirus. The Illinois Department of Public Health also reporting slightly more than 7,000 new confirmed and probable cases. The dead include a Cook County woman in her 40s, a Cook County woman in her 50s, and two men from Cook County in their 50s. Republicans in the House have shot down an attempt to pass President Trump's long-shot demand for $2,000 direct payments to most Americans.
In his complaints about Congress's coronavirus economic stimulus bill, the president said the checks that would be handed out are too low. He wanted more.
Ridiculously low, $600. To $2,000.
The number two Democrat in the House, Steny Hoyer, agrees with the president.
$600 is certainly Not enough for individuals who have been struggling these past 7 months.
But Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says no, $2,000 is too much. The effort fizzled. Hoyer says just sign the bill.
The President of the United States, whether he's in Mar-a-Lago or any place else, ought to empathize with the pain and suffering and apprehension and deep angst that the American people are feeling.
The President has not said yet if he will veto the bill. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. The market's already closed for the holiday. Not much movement today. The Dow up 70, NASDAQ up 33, and the S&P up 13 points. We welcome to the show Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, what do you make of what you saw during this shortened trading day?
It's a pretty typical day on shortened trading days. You tend to see a little bit more of an upward bias. A lot of the participants, major institutional participants, are limited or not participating at all today. So it tends to have a little bit more of an individual investor flavor to it. And typically, individual investors tend to be a little bit more on the optimistic side. So you get kind of a market like we got today, where some modest gains, but nothing really huge in either direction.
Next week, the last trading week of the year, do you expect a lot of movement, a lot of volatility because of any rebalancing, or has most of that been done already?
Yeah, I think a lot of that's been done. You do get kind of the last minute tax harvesting if there are tax harvesting opportunities where people sell some stocks with losses to offset gains. And yes, you do get maybe some repositioning and some quarter end window dressing. But again, you're talking about a week typically where volumes are down because, again, people are still on kind of extended vacations, or many people for that matter. So I think the takeaway is investors shouldn't read too much of anything, quite frankly, into trading over the next five trading days, because again, it's done with limited participation. So don't get sucked into thinking there's trends developing here when in fact there aren't.
Is there anything to this back and forth over this stimulus deal, the president wanting more money for individuals and many in Congress not wanting to do that? Does Wall Street even care about that?
I think they care about it, but I'm not sure that's something that people are factoring into the investment equation at this point. I think the feeling is something's going to get done, and it's going to get done sooner rather than later. And whether it's $600 or it's $2,000 or it's a compromise there, the market seems, comfortable with the fact that, A, something is getting done, and B, it's going to get done sooner or later. So, I would not be driving my investment program based on what's going to happen on the stimulus here. I think the market is looking past that and, looking into 2021 and getting back to kind of what is going to happen with those three major engines of sustained market movements. And those are, and they've always been interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits. And that's what's going to determine the trend of the market in 2021.
Wall Street at all reacting to the fact that President-elect Biden says this stimulus bill is just the start, that he sees a lot more. Is that something Wall Street would welcome and embrace?
The conventional wisdom is yes, it would, but I'm not necessarily sold on it. And I think the election kind of proved that out. I think one of the reasons the market responded so well post-election was that there were kind of checks and balances put in place potentially. I know there's runoff elections in Georgia that could, shift the power in the Senate. But by and large, we came out of that with kind of a different person in the Oval Office, but certain checks and balances on things, and including spending. And I think ultimately the market kind of was comfortable with that. So I'm not in that camp that says, spend, more and more and more stimulus is necessarily going to be good for the market and good for stocks. And that's what, investors should be hoping for, quite frankly.
As we look ahead to 2021, some of those, especially tech stocks that did really well in the pandemic with so many people working from home, are they still attractive going into 2021, or maybe less so?
Yeah, I think they're less so. And you've already seen some money rotating out of those stocks into other areas of the market. I mean, we've had a pretty nice rotation in sectors. I mean, you've had small caps, which are economically sensitive, really come back strongly here in the last couple of months. You've had cyclicals, economically sensitive stocks doing well, and you've had a fair amount of those tech stocks that have been kind of taking a breather and money rotating out of them. You know, a stock like Zoom, for example, which, you know, was everybody's darling in the classic kind of COVID stay-at-home play, you know, that stock's gone from, you know, 588 on as a 52-week high down to 375. So it shed over 200 points here. So I think you have already started to see money moving out of those stocks, and that will probably continue, you know, into 2021, especially if we continue to see, you know, vaccines being deployed and the economic recovery kind of gaining hold here.
Very quickly, what's the Dow theory telling us?
Dow theory is bullish. You've had established new highs in the Dow Jones Transportation Average, Dow Jones Industrial Average. You can throw the S&P 500 in there as another confirming, as well as a Russell 2000 small cap. So the primary trend of this market under the Dow theory is clearly bullish. That doesn't preclude possibilities of pullbacks in the market. They do happen, but I think a pullback would still be within a primary bullish trend.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Chuck Carlson. He's CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Up next, Technology Thursday, the excitement over the so-called plug-in hybrid.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour. Today, most of us own gasoline-powered cars, maybe hybrids. One day, they will be electric. And in between, there's a lot of talk about the plug-in hybrid and maybe the advantages of it. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show. Paul, help us to understand the difference here. We understand gasoline-powered cars. We understand hybrids as we've known them. What's the difference here? What's a plug-in hybrid as opposed to the hybrids we all have grown to understand?
Sure. And my family actually owns both. We own a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid. The standard hybrid, like you've heard of, most people have heard of Prius, the Toyota Prius, that has a little battery, a teeny battery on board, and it basically makes up for the moments when you're starting up the car, which uses up a lot of gas, or when you're, say, at a stoplight and you're accelerating and your car is starting at 0 miles an hour. And at that point, that uses the most gasoline. So the battery it basically compensates, adds a little power while the car gets rolling, and then the engine kicks in, ideally smoothly. You don't even feel that transition from electric to gas, and you're off and running. And that saves a ton of gas because, again, the most gas you use is when you start the car and when you start rolling. Well, and then, of course, full electric, everybody knows that the battery provides all the power. The plug-in hybrid has a very robust battery, much more robust than a standard hybrid like a Prius, and it's a plug-in, meaning you literally plug it in. And what happens is that actually allows the car to go for a certain range on full electric. The thing that's really exciting about it is that it basically adds range. Like, for example, I have the full plug-in hybrid I have is a Volvo, and I plug it in, it gets me about 23, 24 miles of pure electric performance, up to about 70, 80 miles an hour. So it's actually running on full electric. I get about 60 miles per gallon in my car, and it has 400 horsepower. So it's a very powerful car, but it's also very efficient. That plug-in is basically the bridge we're all going to be walking across before we get to full electric.
Now, is it a bridge that we want to walk across, or do we want to stay there? I'm thinking if you have some kind of a long-range trip, it seems better to be able to have some sort of a hybrid so you can keep going, and you don't have to stop with that all-electric vehicle and charge for a half an hour, 45 minutes.
That's exactly right. And you put your finger on it. The amount of time it takes to charge a battery, no matter what battery you're talking about, a plug-in hybrid or full electric, is still sort of, to average consumers, annoyingly long. In other words, with the exception of Porsche, which now makes if you pull into a Porsche-only plug-in or a plug-in station on the road somewhere, you have to find those, of course, you can get full DC power. I think I forget exactly the voltage, but the point is it's 15 minutes to fully charge your battery, or 90%. Now, 15 minutes is still, even at that extremely expensive price point, is still a lot longer than the average fill-up, which takes about 6 to 7 minutes. And people just don't want to do that yet. So the challenge is time. In the end, that plug-in hybrid really is a great bridge, to use that metaphor again, because literally when you run out of that battery charge, you still have that gasoline engine. You can go forever, at least in the current infrastructure.
Seems like the battery technology, as it continues to develop, though, will we get past that to the point where, hey, you could go 200, 300 miles on a battery charge?
Absolutely. In fact, more. Lucid Technologies, which is a California-based company that's competing, obviously, with Tesla and everybody else, and Rivian, which is a pickup truck funded in part by Amazon, funded in part by GM and others. Those are, you know, the range in Lucid is 1,000 miles. but you're looking at about $100,000 for that car. So again, it's not about range. In that case, range is much less of a concern, so you don't worry about time stopping to go charge. But again, down to that battery technology, we're looking now, the end is near, okay? And I mean in a good way. But about 3 to 4 years from now, you're looking at battery technology where the charging time is roughly equivalent to filling up with gas. And at that point, that's the tipping point. At this point, though, with the next 3 to 4 years, plug-in hybrid may be the ultimate balance.
Yeah, it seems like the American people aren't necessarily against battery power. They just want the exact same convenience that they get with their gasoline engines.
You got it. We have paid. I mean, Google is a great example. It's not electric, obviously, technology, but Google is a great example. What we pay for all that free stuff, we've talked about it before, you and I, but it's convenience. We pay for the convenience of free browsing, right? So that convenience is really, it's kind of the drug we all are addicted to, and convenience includes the amount of time. So yes, I don't think American consumers are going to compromise on time. And now that more and more people have been exposed to electric cars, they love the feeling of sort of that whoosh. Like there's endless, literally infinite torque. You get tons of torque, which means fast acceleration. It's fun. It performs well. You're not hurting the environment. Everybody loves it, but they don't want to wait. So when that wait stops, that's when the full electric starts.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. That is Technology Thursday. Up next, oil and gas prices slowly coming back.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Is the worst over for U.S. oil? Prices are creeping back toward $50 a barrel. Joining us now to talk about it, Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Group and a Fox Business News contributor. He's based here in Chicago. Phil, before we talk about oil prices more generally, I want to ask you, because we just had a guest on talking about the rise of battery-powered vehicles, and some people have been predicting that oil is just going to be hammered as more and more people go with either hybrids or all-electric vehicles. Help us to understand, though, that there's still a lot of oil used in making those vehicles, making the electricity, keeping those vehicles going. Do I understand that right?
You're absolutely right. In fact, even Elon Musk says, hey, wait a second, guys, you know, because we hear from a lot of people saying, hey, it's going to be a new era of electric cars. We're all going to be driving electric. We're going to write the obituary for the internal combustion engine. And even Elon Musk is saying, wait a second here, guys, if we, you know, we're not prepared for that. It would take billions of dollars of infrastructure investment to be able to charge all those cars. It would take stripping of landmines all over the world to get all the chemicals. Yes, electric cars are going to be part of the solution, but they're only part of the solution. It's not the total answer.
And maybe that's another one of the reasons why oil has been doing pretty well. Finished today, $48.30 a barrel. What's been going on with his oil rebound?
You know, I think what we're starting to see is improved demand around the globe. And OPEC has had a lot of success, you know, by cutting back on production. We're seeing global inventory levels get back to normal levels. And with the expectations that next year, COVID vaccine could allow people to start getting back to life as it used to be, is increasing demand expectations. You know, and I always think this time of year, coal prices go up too, because there's could be some people on Santa's naughty list. So you got to keep an eye on coal prices creeping up as well.
And as far as people who are concerned about these gas prices, I know they seem to jump in my neighborhood by seemed like about 30 cents a gallon earlier this week. Should they expect them to keep rising?
You know, I think it's going to be a year of higher prices. And I feel bad for the people in Chicago, because guess what? We're going to get hit in the city limits with another gasoline tax coming soon to a station near you. So we are going to see an era of higher gasoline prices. And we have a new administration coming in, and the new administration is going to be less friendly to oil production. That generally means higher gasoline prices at some point in the future.
Thanks so much, Phil Flynn. He is senior market analyst at Price Group. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.